Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to the Sexy Freedom Media podcast. Real quick, disclaimer, this podcast goes into some deep subjects on abuse. We are not clinical psychologists, doctors, therapists, nor provide medical advice. If you are triggered, please stop this podcast, take a few deep breaths, and skip to another podcast. If you are in need of professional expertise, please reach out to your local providers. Also, thank you so much to all of our Sexy Freedom Trailblazers out there. Showing your support by clicking the support button and engaging with financial support allows us the chance to keep this podcast to reach new heights. Yeah! So don't forget to subscribe and share. Thank you all and enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to the Sexy Freedom Media Podcast, a place to discuss pain, passion, and pursuits.
Yes, yes. I want to feel alive.
Breathe.
Make some moves.
Protect the throne. This is Sexy Freedom Media Podcast.
All right, welcome everybody to the Sexy Freedom Media Podcast. I'm your host, Helen Edwards, and my guest today is Joe Potosi. He's the author of When the Dust Settled. Thanks for coming on, Joe.
Thank you so much, Helen. This is an honor and a privilege. I appreciate this.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk with you. We met in a group, right? Facebook group?
Yes, correct.
Okay, do you remember which one it was?
Not right offhand.
I don't remember either. Was it Rockies? Rocky Buckley?
I believe that's the one. Yep.
Yeah. Rocky Buckley. I think it's the power of persona. Yeah. That's shout right. out to Rocky. Awesome Facebook group. I'm in a ton of Facebook groups, but I really, really like his.
I am too. And it's like, I had to think about it for a minute because there's so many different ones, you know.
Yeah.
And it's always good to kind of, in my opinion, it's always good to network with like-minded people, and we can learn so much from each other in spite of maybe we have different backgrounds, different experiences. For us to think we have everything figured out is a mistake, I believe. So many
I'm right people, there with you.
Yeah. So many other people can teach us so much, you know, and always keep an open mind and a good attitude, you know? Yep.
That's right. That's right. So I'm excited because you're an author and I'm an author. And it's rare when I have some authors on my podcast, and I think it's so cool because we can relate in that way of which we know the process. We know what we've been through to have, you know, our life on paper or even our creative imagination manifested into a book. So when did you become an author?
So the book was published in August of 2017. But I need to say that I worked on the project for well over 10 years. What I mean by that is I started the journal. A lot of the stuff I endured as a child. And I discovered by writing stuff down, pen to paper, it was kind of therapy for me. It was, that's the only way I can describe it. It was therapeutic. So I continued. And I would write stuff down, you know, a couple pages or whatever. And then it was when I would read the stories out loud to my wife, who, no exaggeration, has probably read 1,000 books. I would read it to her out loud to get her feedback. It was during those times that when I would get to those tough parts of my story, when I would verbalize those things, it's like I hit a brick wall, and the floodgates opened up and I just broke down. And what I realized rather really soon was it's helping me heal, helping me to become even stronger. And she was like, she's a mental health nurse. She's like, after some time, she goes, you should really write a book because you can help so many people. And so that was my motivation by sharing my story, if it helps one person, it served this purpose. And that's been my mentality through this whole process.
I love that. I love that mentality. And we definitely relate on that mentality, because that's the same thought that I had when I first started my journey of everything. If it just can help one person, like that one person meant so much.
Right. And so, as you mentioned before, I've been following you for a little while, and I need to say this about you. I think that you are so inspiring to other people, and you have like your energy and just your mindset and your attitude. It's encouraging to see people like yourself that, in spite of everything else that's going on in all of our lives with COVID and whatever else might be taking place, you just seem really, really upbeat, and it's kind of contagious. So I want to thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. that makes me feel good about it. I don't really know what to say, but thank you. It's like humbling to hear that, because I really appreciate that.
And the reason I think it's important, when you can get feedback like this, either negative or positive, it helps you grow as a person. And listen, maybe you're on the verge of just, you're burned out. You got the candle burning at both ends, and you're like, what's the point? Why am I still doing this? And there'll be people that will cross paths with you on the internet or whatever, and they may say something to you, and you don't know these people from Adam, and they express to you that you've impacted them in some way. I believe that's a message to you saying keep doing it, you know?
Absolutely, yes.
So that's what I'm trying to tell you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I definitely feel like that. In fact, there's a subject I want to get into with you, but I'm going to wait a little bit on it, on kind of what drives me forward. And I'm sure maybe it has driven you as well. But before we get into that heavy subject, I want to ask you, tell our listeners about your book.
So my book is When the Dust Settled, Between the Rock and the Hard Place. And inside the book, it entails my journey as a child from the age around 3 and a half until 18. I share the stories of how my biological father left when I was under the age of 4, and how hard that was, and how my mother changed, and this new man who eventually became my stepfather, his abusive hand toward my mother and toward myself and my couple of my older brothers. And it went from a loving family to a very dysfunctional, alcoholic, drug-raged situation. And it shouldn't matter to me or to you, Helen, today. In fact, I know it doesn't matter to me, and I'm quite confident it doesn't matter to you what color a person is. If you fall in love with somebody, you care for them, they can be purple, right?
Right.
But back in the 70s, my stepfather was a black man. So a white woman with a black man was really looked down on. And some of my extended family members didn't care for people, black people, and they let it be known. So that was another stigma that was put on us. And in spite of all my efforts to be reunited with my dad, I don't want to give too much away. It was just a struggle. But in spite of that, this is my point. If I could tell you one thing, Helen, this is it in a nutshell. This is what my book is about. Your condition does not have to be your conclusion.
Mm.
Like right now, you just lost, let's play devil's advocate. You just lost your job due to COVID. Maybe you're married, your husband, or for the men out there, your wives, after a long marriage, all of a sudden it's over. And everything is just like the world is falling apart all around you. That's your condition. But it doesn't have to be your conclusion. What I mean is that we can choose to stay in that place or we can pick ourselves up. Never quit, never give up. Know that you have a value, a significance, and a purpose in this thing called life.
Yes, I love that. I love what you said about your condition doesn't have to be your conclusion. I think that is really well said, the way you said it too. I mean, just
thank you.
It hits in so many places and for so many people, just that simple reminder. I mean, it can be a mantra in itself
to exactly
keep moving forward. Yeah. And yeah, you're right. I have the same thought process. So, wow. Yeah. Your book cover is very captivating too. I like the yellow lining and then what is that in the background? It's like white rocks or something. What is that?
Right. It's a painting my sister did, ironically, of me in 11th grade.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of my brothers wrote the foreword, and the other brother, I attribute the title, One to Just Settle, to him. So it's kind of a family affair. So I'm standing, it's like a silhouette, and that gray, whatever, that's supposed to represent dust, but it is really representing calamity, dysfunction, chaos that was all around me throughout those 15 years of my life. And when that calamity settled down, or when the dust settled, guess what? I was still standing. They could not kill my spirit in spite of what they did to me. And when the dust settled, here I am.
Yes. And,
yeah.
I love that. That's wicked cool. I mean, the fact that I like seeing book covers. I always feel like when an author picks their book cover, there's, you know, there's heart and there's a type of consciousness that's put into the efforts of choosing the design. And a lot of people don't know, but it's like, ask an author what's the inspiration behind their design? And then you hear really cool stories like this. That's really awesome that your sister did the cover and then the titles, you know, for your brother. That's really awesome.
Thank you. You know, I got to tell you something funny. Just before we started the talk, you know, I get pretty tired at night because I, you know, hard job or whatever. I was kind of getting kind of sleepy and then we were chatting, but I'm wide awake now.
Yes, it's that energy.
I'm fired up, man. You know why I'm fired up? I'm going to tell you something, Helen.
Tell me, Joe.
People like you that are trying to help other people, and you, it's not lost on you. There's other people who experience things maybe you haven't that can impact people you can't. You follow what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. Hands down.
I know what it's like to be in jail. I know what it's like to be homeless. I know what it's like to have cancer. Maybe you don't. Maybe mm-hmm. you can't relate. You've never been there or done that. I have, right?
Right.
So
yes.
I'm more relatable, possibly. But some of the things I'm going to talk about with the limited time we have goes across all those lines. And, you know, it's just, unfortunately, it happens to a lot of children. Millions upon millions of children. It's almost a subculture in our society and even throughout the world of the abuse that children suffer at the hands of their mother, their father, other family members. And it goes unchecked, unabated. And as a result, these kids suffer from PTSD, anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, just to touch on the base of what you said, you know, maybe there's some people, you know, you can help that I'm not maybe able to reach, or I can reach and you're not able to reach. I get that. It's like the, you know, pieces of puzzle trying to fit into creating a whole nice design, you know, the whole masterpiece. And the subject of child abuse is very, very dear to my heart. I mean, I try to, as much as possible, post it up every now and then. I don't wait for, you know, an awareness month. I mean, awesome. I came from an abusive home also. You know, a lot of things that you mentioned with
your growing up is something that I've endured as well, you know, and my mom, same with her. And I know what that's like. Like, I can relate on that level that it's not okay. Abuse in any form is not okay.
Exactly.
Especially to children, especially. And I think I'm very passionate about a couple things, you know, because there's so many nonprofits. There's so many, you know, people I don't know what to call them, just hubs that need support, right? You've got like sex trafficking. You've got, you know, the turtles that are getting killed by straws. And, you know, you've got an abundance of people that really need support, right? For me, the top two, and I always post it. I try to, when I post like a really nice picture of myself and I say something, I always try to put the two most important things to my heart, which is child abuse awareness. I try to put a number for that, and suicide prevention. Those are the top two I go for. So I'm assuming that child abuse is one of yours.
Absolutely, positively, yes. And, you know, we need to be that voice, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's so many kids that don't have a voice, and yes, absolutely. You know, I guess maybe we'll hit on this in a few minutes, but I have this weird sense. Sometimes, so I worked in the ministry for a long time, a lot of years. And when I'm working with children, it never fails. I can sense when there's a kid there, but he or she is, you know, withdrawn or this thing or that thing. When I worked in the school district, same kind of deal. And, you know, they are kind of, you could tell there's something going on. And a lot of people would overlook it. It's like, oh, that's just the way they are. No, maybe that's just the way they are, but there's a reason for it, right?
Right.
And they just kind of get looked over, you know, and it's just kind of like part of the group, you know, fall in line, just get through it, whatever. And, you know, ever since I was in high school, I helped coach a baseball team, 8 and 9 year olds. I was the assistant coach. We won the championship. The kids got to go to Chicago to see a game. And ironically, I was in 10th grade. A lot of my friends from the high school where I went, their kid brothers were playing on this baseball team, but they didn't get involved because they were too busy gangbanging and selling dope and all that stuff. But I try to invest in these kids' lives, just like my kid brothers. I have 4 kid brothers. And in spite of the fact that their dad is there physically, but he's not there because he's slinging dope. He drinks a fifth of brandy a day. You know, he's a real life monster. I would just pour myself into my kid brothers, right? Mm-hmm. And that I just have gravitated toward helping kids and just give them a positive reinforcements and just good things to do and, you know, just positive attitudes, you know. And unfortunately, as you know, there's so many predators out there that do something similar just to prey on kids, right?
Yes, yes.
So parents can never be too safe. And I know, I remember a while back, they wanted to do a background check on me, and they thought they don't want to offend me. I said, offend me? I said, listen, I expect nothing less. I expect you to turn me into FBI because I have done nothing. I'm never going to do anything. But by all means, don't let my child or whatever get me in, because there's too many sick people. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right. And that's good. And that's good that you encourage them if they want to do that, that you say, yes, go ahead and do that.
I have nothing to hide. I mean, by all means, right?
Right.
So, yep.
Yeah. Wow. Do you work with children right now, or what, you know, you mentioned you're in the ministry. What do you do currently?
Okay, I work at a university full-time as a custodian.
Uh-huh.
But I work part-time as a college-age pastor, right?
Uh-huh.
And I was working with the youth as well. But my job, they rearranged my job because lack of kids at the church. So my main focus became working with college kids specifically. However, I also work at the YMCA youth sports. So I work with, you know, third, fourth grade kids, teaching them football, basketball. Like last night we were teaching them basketball and then we played dodgeball. Who doesn't love dodgeball, right?
Everybody loves dodgeball.
Right. And I volunteer as an assistant coach for basketball for the Y. And it's only because, look, Helen, we both know this. These kids are our future. And if I can impact these kids for the better good just by spending time with them, I'm all for it. I'll tell you a real, real quick story. So I'm going to go back maybe 7, 8 years. Both of my kids were playing tackle football. And I was the defensive coach. And I did that for 3 years as the kids were moving on up. And, you know, obviously we taught the kids the principles of football, but try to instill in them the principles of life as well, right? Long story short, you know, out of sight, out of mind is a lot of people's attitude. You know, the kids grow up, they're gone, you never see them again. That's never been my mentality. They're always in my head and my heart because I enjoyed working with them. So anyway, last summer, I ran into three of those guys. They're all in college now. And in their own special way, they all said to me the same thing. And they're like, look, I mean, we would laugh, but all the games we lost, we didn't win a lot, but we had fun, right? They all said, I'm getting goosebumps as I think about this. They said, thank you for teaching me about life. And thank you for caring. I didn't know it then, but I know now what you guys were doing. And it changed me for the rest of my life. Was it worth it? Absolutely. Absolutely, it was worth it. When I was a little kid, those people that volunteered for the church, they would pick us up on the church, you know, at the church bus, and we would just sing the songs on the bus, or, you know, whatever. And they impacted me. Little did I know, years later, how much all those people impacted me for the greater good, right? And so, you know, when I run into these young men, it's just like, wow. Wow, wow, wow. I didn't mention this when I sent my information, but I had a TV show for 12 years and radio for 5. And the TV show initially was, we would go through the Bible every week. But over time, I expanded it. I involved college kids. They would come do skits and mimes and plays and just goof around. I would start, I was very involved with the Cub Scouts and then the Boy Scouts. I would do stuff with them. And we would film the football games and air it on. It was public access television. So I kind of incorporated a bigger community to share with our town of 60,000 people all the wonderful things and all these wonderful kids and all the great things they're doing, right?
Yes.
And, you know, there was a point in time where I was like, why am I still doing this, you know? But people would say, hey, man, your show's not on. What's going on? And that kind of reminded me that people are getting something out of it, you know, and they like to know updates and what's going on with this program or this. So, you know, I just really, like I was with the kids last night, and it's sad that some of the parents are, you know, they're just not very nice people, you know. And yeah. They're nasty to the children, nasty to us. And, you know, it's just unfortunate.
Yeah. You know, what I like what you said about, you know, how you were growing up and you remember the people that kind of inspired you and impacted you when you were a child. And then it kind of came full circle with the boys that you ran into, you know, and I think just for our listeners, you know, just to remind all of us to spend some time and reflect on that, because I don't, even for myself, you know, just listening to that story, it started making me wonder, like, you know, when's the last time I looked back at my life and I thought to myself, when I was a child, who had an impact on my life? Even if it was a small one, who pops up right in my head, like right away, is somebody who maybe said something, did something, was there for me when I least expected or when I did expect it, you know, and showed me some kind of light in the world. Right. So I really like that you mentioned that. And I think that's a really great practice that we all could use for reflection and gratitude.
I'm on.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, can I mention one thing too while we're at it?
Sure.
Can I encourage others to try to volunteer maybe an hour a month at their local YMYWCA, maybe to Boys Club, Girls Club, maybe wherever you live, you know what's out there. I mean,
yes.
An hour a month. I mean, that's not asking much.
And the asking much at all.
The reason I'm saying this is not only are we living in the pandemic, but these children that are coming up without both parents or without a father is a epidemic, right? It's tragic. And listen, I'll be real quick. I just want to point something out. Let's say you live in Los Angeles, and we can whine and complain about how awful Los Angeles is, the gangs, the drugs, whatever, whatever. Los Angeles is in LA County, and inside of LA County, there's other cities, towns, villages, whatever, whatever. And that's in a state. And that state is in the United States. My point is, it's all connected. It's all connected. If you go back to LA into a neighborhood, in that neighborhood, there's a certain like bedroom community. And on those specific streets, there's all these nice homes. And inside those nice homes are those broken children that think nobody cares. What difference does it make anyway? What's the point of living? I mean, nobody cares. No one listens. No one loves me, etc. As a community, I think it's high time we start to make a difference. I'm not saying be a person's parent. What I'm saying is go to the other side of the tracks. I grew up in a Black household, right? So in my neighborhood in the projects, I was a minority. There was Hispanics, Black people, Asian people. And guess what? We don't judge them by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And how can you judge a person by the content of their character if you don't give them the time of day, right? And that goes with children. I've seen it time and time and time again. Oh, there was a bunch of little Hispanic boys, you know, they're so-and-so because they're Hispanic. Give me a break.
Right.
Oh, there was a bunch of Native Indian kids. I'm part Sioux Indian, so I take offense to this, but, you know, they call them the Redskins or this or that. I'm like, wait a minute. Those kids are just like your kids. There's no disparity. They're equal. They're just as smart, just as bright. So don't sit there and put them down.
Those I think we need to, as adults, we need to start stepping up and leading by example.
We do. And that's why,
go ahead.
That's why I try to encourage. I'm not trying to lecture if I'm coming off the way. That's not my intent. I'm begging people to at least consider it.
Yeah. And, you know, just to add to that, volunteering, it's a beautiful thing. And I'll tell you why, because I can relate to it too. When I first started speaking, my first public speaking experience was in 2008. I volunteered at the shelter and I was by myself when I did it. So you don't need anybody to hold your hand. You just need to have that heart. There's it's like an ingredient of compassion, drive, you know, and even if it starts off, there's people out there, and I know they're listening, and they know who they are. They want to know what's in it for them, even when it comes to kids. Like, oh, I don't have time. But if you say, hey, I'll pay you $20 an hour to work with this child. Oh, I got time now, you know? So people want to know what's in it for them. And, you know, if compassion doesn't lead you to want to help kids out there, maybe you should let selfishness be your drive. Because once you start working with kids, once you start volunteering for anybody, it's a game changer. It changes your life. And that it's like the selfishness starts going away. It's very strange, but it's a very beautiful thing. Even if you want to experiment with it, try it out.
You know, you're absolutely right. I mentioned this before, since I was in 10th grade, I've been volunteering off and on. But since 1997, I volunteered ever since 97, however many years that is. And you're right. It brings a peace and a joy. You know, years ago, I became a Christian in 97, a born again believer. I created a clown ministry and I named the clown GD the clown, which stood for God's disciple. But I was a GD as a high school kid. Not full-fledged, but I dabbled with the gang life, kind of like on the outside. I associated with a lot of these dudes, but I knew they weren't family. You know, I was looking for acceptance. I was looking for love. I wanted to belong to something. And, you know, I want to tell you that gang life is not the answer, right? So I took that bad experience and I flipped it. And I share that story when I'm in character, how I was I used to be known as a GD, a Larry boy. And I talked to him about that. But now I'm God's disciple. And, you know, and how God can take you, all your mistakes, all your perceived screw ups or whatever, and he can use it to impact other people for the rest of your days.
Yeah. You know? I like, you know, and I always often tell people, I grew up in the church, three different types of religions, but I, you know, there's a part of me that's remembered this one specific saying that Jesus said, and he said, you know, lo, many will say unto you, I am here or I am there, but I say unto you, I am within you. And that's always stuck with me. And I remember thinking, well, if that Great Spirit is within you, then act like it, you know, be that.
Wow.
Let it shine, you know.
You're taking us to church.
Well, I'm just saying, that's what stuck with me. I mean,
No. You're right.
Yeah.
Once you put your trust in Jesus Christ, Holy Spirit indwells you. It isn't a light switch you can turn it off, on and off. He doesn't leave you when he gets mad. However, Galatians chapter 5 talks about don't be drunk with wine, which is precipitation. I got a DUI a long time ago, right? I was driving under the influence. I was living under the influence of alcohol. Guess what? You hit it on the head by living under the influence of God, the Holy Spirit. People see that Helen and Joe, they have a new walk. They have a new talk. And I want what they have. I used to party with Joe. I used to hang out with Joe. And I had a reputation. I love to fight, right? And I won some and I lost some. I won some and I lost some and I got the scars to prove it.
Yeah.
They used to call me Bulldog when I was in the Navy because I used to Bulldog people. But
yeah,
God changed me, right?
Yeah. But I mean, I will say, you know, I'm a lot of people know me, and I even wrote a book about my own spiritual beliefs and my spiritual practices. You know, I'm more on the native side of it. You know, I'm not a Christian, but I am a believer of, I don't know the right way to say this. I'm a believer of love and light, you know, and I do know that no matter what you are, just like color, no matter what title you place on you, no matter what label, just be the best of that label that you can be, as long as it helps somebody and doesn't hurt somebody, you know? And I've had a DUI also, but I can't say I don't party, because I'm a partier. I love celebrating life and I love drinking the wine. But let me tell you something, I'm definitely much more responsible than I've ever been in my life, because once you get a DUI, changes your thing. No, you don't want another one. So exactly I get that. But yeah, what I'm trying to say is, like, you know, whether or not, you know, what I was saying by saying what Jesus said, I'm within you, is to me personally, my personal experience with that saying in itself was like, this man, you know, whatever anybody wants to believe, Jesus Christ, Jesus the Savior, Jesus God, what I took from it was like, if he's God and God is him and God is me, and God is in me, then, you know, when I'm saying act like it, I need to be good to myself. I need to be high spirited. I need to work out. I need to, you know, I'm not going to have God living in this temple that's going to hell on earth. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to give it the best temple I can give it. Maybe some wine here and there, you know, got my DUI, I got smacked around a little bit, but those are things that help correct me and get back on my course.
Right.
Yeah.
So we talked before about your condition does not have to be your conclusion. Let me dive into this a little bit. So I'm going to break down another little statement that I've read somewhere. It's not mine, so I'm not taking ownership of it, but I love it. It goes like this. If you are not healed from those who hurt you, you will bleed on those who never cut you.
Oh my God, I just told somebody the same quote.
I love it. Isn't it true?
I love it too, Joe. I love it too. Oh, I love it so much. It was like a quote that kind of hung over while I was traveling.
Yep. And the thing is, in my book, it's about a kid who's tenacious, he fell down 9 times and he got up 10. He didn't quit. He never gave up. And, but through the process of time, you know, yeah, this kid made mistakes, et cetera, et cetera, but he healed, right? He healed. Mm-hmm. And this part, I get emotional, so I'm sorry if I get that way with you now. When I talk about your condition does not have to be your conclusion, I have 2 sons, a 22-year-old and a 20-year-old. They don't know what it's like to be locked in the basement. They don't know what it's like to be beaten for no reason. They don't know what it's like to have a gun pulled at them and the trigger pulled. They don't know what it's like to go hungry or to be homeless. My point, I broke the cycle of abuse, of neglect, of abandonment. Am I a perfect father? No. Am I a perfect husband? No. But I can go to my grave with all the confidence in the world knowing that the cycle was stopped. And listen, it is true that my mom, my stepdad, my dad all had traumatic, awful childhoods themselves. However, that does not give them the right, or did not give them the right or the license to do to me what they did. Period. Point blank. Full stop.
There it is. Truth.
And, you know, I want other people to know that you have a value and a significance. And in spite of what you've been ingrained in your mind your whole life, maybe from abusive parents, maybe an abusive spouse, that you're worthless, you're garbage, you're nothing, you're never going to be nothing. That's the biggest lie ever. You have a value that's unmeasurable. You have a purpose and a plan in your life. Obviously, I don't know what that is, but believe me, you have one. You know, when I was a young boy, and this is in the book, I had a paper out that I quit, and I can't get into all the details, but if one was to read the book, they'll see. My stepdad questioned me about it. And he's 6'5", 350 pounds. My mom was only 4'11". And I'm a little boy. He was a giant. He was a real life monster. You know, we talk about the bully on the block, the bully in the schoolyard, the bully in the neighborhood. He was the bully I lived with. in those four walls every day. He questioned me about quitting the paper out. He himself didn't work. And he didn't like my answer or lack of an answer. So he pulled the trigger, or he pointed the gun at me and pulled the trigger. I'm ashamed to admit this, but then again, no, I'm not. Instantly, I peed my pants in fear as I ran down the basement stairs and hid behind the furnace. And it was at that point, that was the breaking point, because for years I was walking on eggshells, hoping my dad, hoping my dad would show up. It would be like Superman to save the day. It never happened. Mm-hmm. Right after that, I woke up. There was nobody at the house. I'm looking for the 38 caliber handgun. He had a 12 gauge shotgun too. I couldn't find either one of those guns. Had I found one, I made up my mind I was going to blow my brains out. They can clean up the mess. I am done. I'm done. And that's when, not an audible voice, but I believe God was speaking to me. And this is simply all I kept hearing. Your brothers need you. Your sisters need you. And from that day on, not that I wasn't motivated before, but from that point on, the abuse intensified, the neglect, everything intensified. I refused to give them the satisfaction of even contemplating taking my own life again, because my life had value, and that value was invested in my kid brothers and in my sister, period. And that's what woke me up every day. And that's what kept me going.
You know, Joe, thank you so much for sharing that. That's very personal and very deep. And I know it's in your book, and I'm sure there's so much more to read about that. That definitely hits home. I mean, thank you for not taking your life. This podcast has been amazing thus far. And I know that your siblings would have been just shattered. I personally know that because my brother took his life 3 years ago, and it's very, very devastating.
I'm sorry to hear that. I'm sorry for your loss.
Yeah, you know, but one of the things I realized, and you said it, is, you know, you fought back, and your mentality fought back, fought for you. You know, God within you fought for you, and it's just, it's magnificent, the power of, you know, that decision to keep going. And it's almost like I am sure you have your own words for it, but for what it sounds like to me, like your spirit grew larger and it stronger. And it takes spirit to, and maybe what you say, Holy Spirit or something. It takes major spirit. It's force, that it's an unseen force to keep fighting, to keep going, especially enduring physical and verbal abuse as a child.
Right. You know, you asked a question earlier, I didn't really answer it, about the cover of the book. If you look at the cover, there's like a gold or yellow aura around my body.
Yes, I see it.
And that represents my inner strength, right? Mm-hmm. So there was pure calamity. And, you know, I'm standing there with my hands on my hip, like, that's all you got? Because, funny story, this is the truth, Helen. I wouldn't lie to you. Me and my baby brother, Greg, both went in the military. I was in the Navy. And we joke about this now. Those drill instructors could not say or do anything to me worse than my own mother. And that's the truth.
Oh, see, wow.
They break you down mentally and they build you back up into the sailor or to the Marine, the soldier they don't want you to be. And by the way, I want to commend you on having a wonderful son who's in the military. I saw that picture a while back, and I'm so happy for you, and it's a big commitment, and I salute your son.
Yeah. Well, thank you for you and your brother's service.
Yeah.
I'm really proud of him, my son as well.
That's awesome. So, you know, that's the thing. I was already broken. I couldn't get any lower. And it was really, it was laughable. It really was.
Wow. Well, that explains between a rock and a hard place. That's what it says on here. I really like that little quote down there. It's kind of like, yeah, it's relatable. It draws you in. And, you know, we got to wrap the podcast up, but, you know, one of the questions I want to ask now is, you know, so where are you at? What do you want to do? What do you want to do to further, like, you know, get your, because with the COVID thing, I know a lot of authors aren't out there book signing. Do you do podcasts? If not, Joe, I really think you need to do a podcast. Your voice is amazing. You articulate very well. You've got an amazing, I'm telling you, captivate me. And your stories are like, I'm just like, in my mind, I'm like, what happened next? You know? And I really think if you haven't done a podcast, I really think you need to do one. So what are you doing? What's next for you?
Thank you for asking and thank you for the compliment. And yes, I'm going to be launching my very own podcast. I've been on a ton of podcasts. And before this whole COVID thing, I had done a lot of public speaking in my general area, whether it's a coffee shop or a church or a community center. And I'm hoping to resume that as soon as possible. So I'm always open. I was doing both public speaking and podcasts because I want to get the story out there. I started my second book back earlier this year. It's a lot of work. But I want to tell what happened. Like you said, what happens next? Well, there's the rest of the story as well, right? That brings me to present day. And I'm just all about trying to help people. And would you recommend Anchor as a good platform or Zoom? What would you suggest for a new person starting out?
Well, we're currently recording on Zoom because of the area I'm in, but normally I do Anchor. So what you can do with Anchor, I suggest Anchor. I've helped people start their podcast on Anchor. And what Anchor does is once you record and you upload on there, you can still edit your recordings. And it's a platform that allows, it basically provides your link to 8 other or 9 other platforms. So all I do is upload it on Anchor, and Anchor transfers it over to iTunes, Spotify, Overcast, Radio Podcast, Google Podcast. So it does the work for me.
So maybe at some later point, I can have you on my my show. I think
absolutely.
Yes. So listen, I'll wrap it up and let people know where they can find me. I have a website.
Yeah. Where can people find you? I'll put in the show notes as well.
Okay. JoePotosi.com. Also on Facebook, Joe Potosi. Instagram, Joe_Potosi. And Twitter, Joe Potosi. And the website, I've had it up and running for maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, but I'm trying to expand it. I'm trying to do different things, learning as I go. But the book is on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Zulon Press. And all those links are on my website as well. So bottom line, your condition does not have to be your conclusion. No matter what you guys are facing in life, please take a deep breath, meditate, do whatever you have to do, but never quit and never give up.
Awesome. I love it. Thank you so much, Joe. Joe Potosi, everybody. And like, share, comment, email sexyfreedomnow@gmail.com. All of Joe's information is going to be in the show notes. Remember, hashtag sharing is caring. Please spread this, subscribe, and find me, Hell of a Journey with 1L, Sexy Freedom Media. Thanks, guys, and have a great day.
Hey, Helen.
Want to hear more?
Visit us at sexyfreedommedia.com.